Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Dicker Data Limited full year 2022 results update. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to David Dicker, Chairman and CEO. Please go ahead.
My name's David Dicker. I'm the founder, CEO and chairman of Dicker Data. And we're going to give our results for last financial year today. Before I hand over to Mary, I'll just make a few comments on the results and on the overall situation, because being completely honest, we didn't get quite the result we would have liked to have got, but we were affected by forces that are completely out of our control and for which we actually can't get a remedy. I'm talking about inflation to some extent, but principally interest rates, because we don't control the interest rates. No company controls the interest rates, and if the interest rates go up, conceptually your results are going to go down to some extent, and it's impossible. You might say, well, let's make some changes in other areas, but the issue with that is that those changes are not actually linked to the interest rates. We haven't got any coupling with interest rates, and there's nothing we can actually do in that regard that we couldn't do regardless. So it's a situation where all companies are basically affected, and that's the way it goes. It's like the old saying, a rising tide lifts all boats. Well, when the tide goes out, all the boats end up on the mud. And that's just the way, that's the way it is. Doesn't mean that we can't get good results. And I still feel that last year's result was pretty good, all things considered. And we're certainly full speed ahead for this year. But sometimes things aren't exactly the way you'd want them. And we've been in this business for a long time. And sometimes you just got to ride the ups and downs. Details on the result. I'll hand over to our CFO, Mary, who will give you all the numbers, and then Vlad, who will give you an update of the overall position and the market position. Thanks very much. Over to you, Mary.
Thanks, David, and thank you, everyone, for joining us on this call. We're pleased to be presenting our results for the FY22 year, and sort of to reiterate what David said, it was a bit of a challenging year with a number of initiatives and plus the wider macroeconomic environment. So what I'm referring to, as a business, we undertook a couple of acquisitions, 2021 and 22, and a lot of work was put in place in FY22 to actually integrate and consolidate and start working towards delivering the synergies that we expect from this business
to actually integrate and consolidate.
Sorry, I'm hearing back.
Working towards delivering.
Sorry, guys, there's a back. I can hear hear it back. So apologies for that, everyone. Where we ended up for the year, it was 3.1 billion revenue, an increase of 25%. Strong EBITDA number as well, all things considered. It was also an increase of 9.4%. It was pleasing to see our recurring revenue increase to 743.9 million, an increase of 42.5%. Where we were impacted was the delivery of net profit after tax, which was down 0.7%, relatively flat on last year, and in the circumstances of one-off expenses, inflationary environment, and rising interest rates, we feel that was a solid result, taking into account those elements. If we have a look at the financial trends, the delivery of gross profit margin was in line with how we expected it, and you can see that normalising from the FY20 and FY21 year, where we had unique circumstances around demand allowing additional delivery of margins, but where we delivered in FY22 is in line with expectations. Continuing growth trajectories for both revenue and EBITDA, where we saw an impact was on net profit margins, and looking at the trends, we are seeing where they are back to where we were delivering in 19 and 18, or more so 19, and that's taking into account that we were also carrying some duplicated expenses in FY22 as we worked through our integration. Looking at the FY22 consolidated group results, operating costs excluding one-off costs increased by 32.4%, which is impacting the delivery of the operating profit before tax. This was predominantly around increases in salary and headcount costs. With the two acquisitions of Exceed and Hills, we added over close to 250 people in terms of our headcount numbers, and in terms of looking how retaining the resources in an environment in terms of the market around labour constraints and requirement for people to keep delivering on the revenue growth that we were heading towards, we saw that cost increase close to 29%. Again, as the company continues to grow, we should see an improvement in leverage from our cost line. And also as we synergise the operating costs from both the Exceed and Hills acquisition. Included in the operating cost number is also about $4.5 million in amortisation of customer contracts, ending up with operating profit before tax posting a slight increase on the prior year. If we break that down a bit further, if we look at country by country, which is probably more relevant in terms of trying to understand the dynamics of where we were working toward in terms of profitability, you know, Australia delivered a very solid result. This is in the context of the Australian business being a very mature business with a lot of established strong relationships with vendors and in segments of the market that we participate in, and even bringing in the DAS business relative to the underlying business, it's a much smaller pie. And whilst it didn't necessarily deliver in terms of profitability metrics, it is there as a strategy in terms of increasing our market share in a different segment of the market. So for Australia, revenue grew over 18%. Gross profit margins actually increased, and this is a testament to the type of segments we are now participating in, the DAS business, AV, and some other improvements in margin with the different categories of business that Vlad will be able to elaborate on in the business update. As David said at the start of the call, the biggest impact in terms of profitability was the increase in interest costs. We do fund our business, our working capital via debt facilities. It's sort of been the core way that we've managed the business. Whilst we did forecast for some interest rate increases, I think the speed at which the rates were increasing month in, month out was probably the part that was more unpredictable than the concept that there was going to be rate rises. But even having said that, the Australian business still delivered net profit after tax number increase on the prior year of an increase of 3.3%. If we look at the New Zealand business, the significant revenue growth was delivered with the integration of the Exceed business, giving us access to a whole division of our market we didn't participate in before, being consumer retail, and being a larger proportion of our overall New Zealand business, the impact on margins was quite evident, as that business tends to operate in a lower margin environment. It's still a profitable business, but not quite the metrics in terms of how we generally are looking to deliver. And the size relative to the commercial business impacting overall average margins. The strategy is still, we feel, is still correct. We're looking to grow our commercial business and having access to new vendors that we acquired with that acquisition, particularly the HP relationship, being one of the larger vendors in the New Zealand market, and starting to now work on some more synergies across the Australian vendor portfolio to be able to grow our commercial business and start increasing the delivery on margins in that business. New Zealand also, we had over around $2 million of amortization of intangibles. I'll just point out that these numbers in NZD and slightly vary to the AUD conversion of the New Zealand business, but it still gives a good concept of where we sit in the New Zealand market. So there's a bit of work to be done in FY23. We acknowledge that around the New Zealand business, and that's going to be our key focus because we still see it as a major opportunity in terms of bringing up the profitability metrics to the Australian business. Turning our view to the balance sheet, the FY22 year was challenging from a working capital investment perspective. The acquisition of Exceed and Hills were predominantly hardware vendors, which meant additional investments in inventory. There was also a period of supply chain disruption, which didn't give us a lot of predictability on deliveries, and we couldn't rely on vendor ETAs. So there was, our teams responded in a way that you would expect around ensuring we had sufficient inventory to meet the channel needs by carrying higher levels. And we saw our inventory investment increase by about $60 million. Even more so, we saw an increase in our receivables book as we supported credit in the channel. This is one of our core competencies or core expectations of distribution is to support trade credit within the channel, and the type of customers and that came with the acquisitions changed slightly the profile of our customer mix, meaning that we've got extended days, whether it's they were the existing terms that operated with the from the Exceed and Hills businesses. Plus, there was, requests from customers on extended terms, particularly where there was supply chain disruption and we couldn't complete orders in their entirety. So that meant that our overall working capital dollars have increased, significantly. This was funded by a combination of increase in debt levels, and then we did do a capital raise, which predominantly was for the building of our new warehouse. But in the first instance, we applied it against our debt levels and have drawn on it throughout the year to fund part of the working capital requirements. From a debt to equity scenario, with the leverage has been maintained relatively, but with the increase in interest rates, we've seen the debt service cover ratio come off from where we were at 21, but definitely all well within any kind of covenants that we need to cover. From a cash flow perspective, just as I've said earlier, predominantly has gone into increases in working capital. Even the acquisition of Hills was predominantly inventory, so the combination of the two represents the increase in our working capital investments. The company has had a strong dividend policy in terms of paying quarterly dividends, and this wasn't any different for FY22. The only caveat or the variation is that we tried to smooth out the dividends and were a lot more optimistic on what we thought the final net profit after tax number is likely to be. So the interim dividends were set higher than they probably should have been, resulting in a lower final dividend, but comparatively was in total the same, similar dividends cents per share being paid in for the FY22 year as we did in FY21. The dividend policy has sort of been an underlying feature of the company, and we don't see that changing. I know there's different views in respect of that, we are looking to maintain the 100% dividend policy and still pay the interim dividends, but we will have to rethink the dividend per share each quarter. If we look at sort of what's next in terms of the business, I just want to give you an update on the warehouse extension. We completed our current facility in 21. We felt that we would have that space for a period of time, but with the growth experienced in the revenue number, it was quite evident that we had to press the button on the extension piece. So we commenced the second stage of the warehouse build late last year, and that will provide a further almost 17,000 square metres in warehouse space. It's currently on track to be completed in the first half of this year. Hopefully we'll be in a position where we might even be able to be in there June, July of this year. Because we are running out of space as we have closed the Hills warehouse and moved a lot of the Hills inventory in at our Purnell location. The cost of construction is estimated to be about the $15 million mark, $12 million for the build and $3 million for estimated fit out, and currently it's tracking on time and on budget. Now, Vlad will give you a more detailed update on the Hills strategy and the access and surveillance market, but just wanted to give you an update in terms of where we landed. We paid $21.7 million for Hills, of which predominantly close to $20 million of it was inventory, and we inherited a number of branch sites, which added costs that weren't in our forecasting, what the work that's been put in place over FY22 was to refit some of those branches. There's been investments made in the look and feel and setting up the business to start delivering the profitability metrics in the FY23 year. So there was costs incurred that were also duplicated as a result of running the extra warehouse whilst we were looking to integrate this business. And that work has now been done, and the branches have, we've reduced some of those branch costs by exiting some of those sites and re-signing new leases for new sites that are more suitable for the operations, and also sets us up for having the right sort of strategy around the DAS business. That's the update from myself. I will hand it over to Vlad now to provide the business update.
Excellent. Thank you, Mary. So, good morning, everyone, and thank you, David, for the opening. I just wanted to start with that last year was a very, very challenging year, very emotional year. There was a lot of things that came into last year. This was very unpredictable, but also a lot of really, really good things happened last year. It was an incredibly successful year for us. We've executed a number of very, very important strategies. And I think last year I would probably summarize as we're getting out of that unpredictability. We're setting ourselves and putting ourselves in a fantastic position to take advantage of all that hard work that the company and organization put last year. So looking at some of those market challenges, I think they were, not dissimilar to the year before, but started to change a little bit. So obviously, as the supply chain started to normalize, we would start to taking some of the inventory lines in place. Because the unpredictability of ETAs and deliveries was still very much there. And therefore, it started tightening some of our working capitals. The ETAs and supply chain is starting to show some real clear sign of improvement. In fact, I'm very certain, I have a very good feeling that by end of this year, we will get back into the complete normality. Because I could see that supply is getting better, factories are getting built, they produce more, demand is getting slightly adjusted into the certain areas, so supply is catching up, so that's going to actually work really well, and we go slowly business as usual in 2023. Exactly the same situation with chip shortages, which kind of result one and the other, and logistic constraints as well. Everything was as a consequence of things that's been happening last year, it was incredibly hard to predict. When we walked from 21 into 22, obviously 21 was a really strong year for us, close to 30% growth in top line and bottom line, gave us a good headwind. Going in 2023, we didn't forecast things like, war starting in Ukraine, in Europe, which in effect influence the energy prices, the inflation rates, which our business is incredibly dependent on. I mean, we are ultimately a distributor and a logistic company. The energy cost and freight charges and all that sort of stuff incredibly relevant to us. We had to go through acquisition and normalize operational status of acquisition of two companies. We welcomed 300 new employees into the business and the back of Exceed and Hills Distribution. So there was a lot of things to go through. And I'm really, really happy the way we've handled it, the way we've showed resilience and still delivered a very strong number. So that's a market challenge. Let's go to the next slide. What's called IT and market and strategies. So I wanted to show you our market share and how we're actually doing this. Ultimately, certain things we can't control, certain things we can't control. We can't control macroeconomics, influences, environment. But what we can control is how well we go against our competitors. How is the market sees us from our immediate market, our reseller partners, our suppliers, our vendors, how do we perform? And I'm so happy to report that we did really well. If you look at the Australian market, I have removed consumer part of the pie because I mean, we have in Australia a very, very tiny, small consumer division. But in order to make the comparison more fair, I think if we just look at the corporate commercial enterprise business only, because that's where 98% of Dicadata's Australian business coming from, we see it at 35%, which is double as Synnex, double as Ingram. In fact, if you put both Synnex and Ingram together, we're still a larger and much stronger distributor. So we've established ourselves as a strong, strong player in this environment. If we look further and segment the business, and we look at what we call a mid-market and SMB market segment, we hold even more market share. There won't be a vendor where we hold less than 40 to 45% market share. So from this perspective, we continue to service our partners exceptionally well. We continue to grow revenue. We're walking into the new market segments. We're opening up new opportunities. So from our vendor point of view, our market share is growing. From our partners' point of view, our partners are spending more with us than with our competitors. So that bit is working really, really well. If we look at the New Zealand market, I've left consumer and retail piece in there because obviously our New Zealand business have a large portion with acquisition of Exceed piece, large portion of a consumer business. And so we're comparing basically the entire distribution available market. We are putting ourselves in a very strong number two position with 29% market share. Again, even within a very, very challenging and tough operationally integration year in New Zealand, we've managed to grow our top line substantially. So 1 + 1 did not equal 2. It's actually equal 2.5, so which is really, really good. Some of the areas that we wanted to grow and go a little bit harder in New Zealand didn't happen. Some of the operational leverages and some cost base of New Zealand people we've been very cautious with. I think now as all operations are done, we've moved the warehouse, we've moved the office, we've established our partner base, we've completely structured our business in New Zealand. I think now this is the time where we go deeper and finding those operational leverages and driving that net profit margin opportunities in New Zealand. But in terms of our market share with the leading vendors like HP, Dell Tech, Microsoft, Apple, and a few others, we're solid, very, very strong, and performing really good as well. So again, that's why we call out in New Zealand as perhaps I'm going to name names. In New Zealand was probably one of the biggest challenges in 2022. It will result in being the biggest opportunity for us in 2023. That's how we see it internally within our business, and where you can obviously sense things where a lot of focus and a lot of energy is going to go in 2023. If we go to the next slide, this is just demonstrating your number of portfolios. A lot of investors would ask me a lot, what's the right number of vendors? I don't think there is a clear answer here. It's all about, are we delivering the right value to those vendors? Are we doing what those vendors, you know, want us do in this particular region? And vice versa, are they relevant to us? Are they a strategic vendor? Are they a complementary vendor? What sort of return on investment this vendor brings into the Dicadata? So again, maybe you know, 10, 15 years ago, we didn't have this luxury. Now we can actually assess the relevancy of the partnership. How is that going to change within 5 years and 10 years? What's the long-term relationship? So this year, we've started this process, last year in 22, we started this process. We're going to continue with this process in 23 of actually assessing a lot of vendor relevancies, which are the gaps we have, what are the new vendors we need to bring in, and maybe perhaps what the vendors in our portfolio don't make a lot of sense. So we're starting that process already. Again, it was a very challenging year, and yet it's just, again, the testament of a success that us and the organization keep achieving. You look at the various industry recognition trophies that we received. Again, there was an Australian business and New Zealand business. It was APJ recognition, Dell Technology, one of our fastest growing vendor, and probably still has one of the biggest growth opportunities, awarded us with the distributor of the year at the APJ level. Similar thing we've had with Lenovo, similar thing with Juniper Networks and so forth. We've had a couple of really good software vendor recognitions. We've had Veritas after awarding us with a best distributor of that region, which is APJ region. Then the next thing, it led into them appointing us as their exclusive distributor in this region, which is fantastic. So we have won our diversity and inclusion champions at the Victor ceremony around by ARN. On the 10th year in a row, we've become a hardware distributor of the year, and we've become a software distributor of the year in New Zealand. I think it's phenomenal. Just shows the culture that we have, the quality of people that we have, and level of success and resilience that these people is driving, which makes us all incredibly proud. So next slide, we go into the 2022 vendor additions. Obviously, we've got a lot of new vendors came from acquisition of the Exceed business and Hills business, but also we've been working and adding organically a lot of new vendors. So Philips came on board to add to our AV strategy. Cloudflare came on board to add our cybersecurity presence in the market. By the way, Cloudflare came as an exclusive vendor as well. There was a very significant win by our software team. We have Eaton power distribution vendor came in. WatchGuard, and a few other new vendors that came in on board. That is now become a function of day-to-day thing of myself and my executive team, leadership team. We assess the new vendors, we assess the new technologies. We're looking at what our market requires, and we're bringing those vendors on board. And that work will continue to happen. If we look at the next slide, slide number 18, as a long-term vendor relationships and diversification, again, a great picture, a great testimony of our well-executed plan. It's always a balance between a volume and value business. We are a hybrid business. We drive both really successfully well. When it comes to the top five vendors, which is the biggest, probably top five vendors in the world, when it comes to the channel and distribution, Microsoft, Cisco, Dell Technology, Lenovo, Hewlett Packard Enterprise, I wanted to make sure that when my reseller partner and one of my 10,000 partners contact and get serviced by Dicker Data, they get exactly the same service level as they would deal with the vendor itself. And for that, I need to build a very competent, skillful, and very strong culturally business units within the organization. That top five, representing about 50% of the business, is exactly what we want to achieve. And that's what exactly we've been achieving, especially in the last 3 years. Also then, we need to make sure that the vendor diversification is very strong. So we don't want a particular one vendor to hold a big portion. That's more of a risk mitigation strategy. So our top vendor, ANZ, which is Microsoft, is holds just over 11% of the overall share within Dicker Data ANZ. If you look at the independent territories, Australia and New Zealand, again, it will be a very similar kind of percentage. So in Australia, Cisco is still the largest vendor, but in New Zealand, Apple is the largest vendor. So, but overall in ANZ, it's actually Microsoft who is holding the top position. Saying all that, I think we achieved a nice, good balance between business, and we're continually driving this vendor diversification strategy. Next slide, if we go to the revenue category. So where is our growth came from? $3.1 billion, first of all. What a magnificent milestone for the organization, get over $3 billion. We've had 36.7% growth in our software business. We've had over 20% growth in our hardware business. And interestingly enough, both acquisitions with the Hills Security Distribution and Exceed Group predominantly brought a lot of hardware vendors on board. So we had a full year realization of Exceed business in New Zealand, and we've had a 7 months, I believe, 6 or 7 months realization of the hardware business. So good growth in both sets. Software is doing exceptionally well. Recurring revenue grown 42.5%. It's now $745 million. We're trying to get to a $1 billion mark over the next 18 months. I think it's going to happen. We have some exciting new programs that we're driving. The existing new vendors, existing and new vendors, bringing a lot more subscription type of revenue product sets and opportunities to us. So I think software is going to be a big dominant growth in 2023 as well. If I look at the hardware pie on the left, every single category has grown. The least growth was coming from PCs. We've called it out in the beginning. We've called it out that PCs is going to get a softer, it's flatlining. A lot of the industry experts were saying that the software will be declining. Some of the industry research analysis was saying that PCs will be declining up to 20% year on year. Obviously, we haven't seen it in our business. We still delivered a slight growth. I do believe the tendency of that flat line in PC business going to continue in 2023. But looking back at January and February pretty much is over, and I'm looking at my open orders and the activity levels and open quotes, PCs, commercial and enterprise PCs are still very, very, very solid. So I absolutely know, I have full confidence in that line is going to continue to do either flatlining or maybe a slight increase in 2023. The networking started to do better. We started to get a little bit better stock in. We started to ship some of our backlog that we've brought in from the beginning of 2022. Server and storage component, data center infrastructure went into the growth. If you believe last year, it was a decline. Again, we're having that mid-market and SMB started to get a little bit more livelier and doing more projects in. I feel this year we're probably going to start seeing some bigger projects dropping between 2020 and 2021, and even majority of 2022, a lot of larger-scale projects were kind of frozen. We definitely see a lot of opportunities, and we're quoting on a lot more opportunities right now. In fact, if I have a quick mention about our open orders and our open quoting, currently, whether it's hardware or software, we're experiencing 30% increase in our quoting activity. So as you can see, there's absolutely no slowdown in the way we go into the market and quote. If I look at our open orders, it's holding just under $300 million, so it's back from under $400 million. So you can see that supply chain is getting better, but it's nowhere near my $150 million that it's supposed to be. So we still probably have double amount of backlog that we need to ship. And by the way, as the supply chain is going to improve, this $150 million will be invoiced and shipped on top of all the regular business activities. So that probably will give us a slight upside this year as I start seeing it improving. But looking at all the other categories as well, consumer peripherals, obviously, with Exceed and Apple type of business coming in, huge increase there. AV UC has continued the growth, and we continue seeing a good upside there. So, you know, I'm quite enthusiastic, given all the macroeconomic circumstances, given all the unpredictability last year. We've learned, we understood, and then going in 2023, we're a lot better equipped. We're putting ourselves in a more predictable type of environment. We've budgeted a lot of things. We know that will be probably a couple of more interest rate rises. So everything is in the budget now. Okay, going into opportunities. I think I've touched base on some of the key opportunities, but again, cybersecurity, a big token opportunity growth. We're going to go after this very aggressively, both Australia and New Zealand. Software, you've seen 30% growth. We're expecting another very, very strong growth this year. Anything to do with hybrid IT and multi-cloud is a big incentive for us to go after this business. Look, you can read it for yourself. Everything here represents a great opportunity. And I always say, within my experience, my personal experience, I mean, over 20 years being in this industry, I know that tech is always finds the way to benefit, whether the market conditions are good or bad. When market conditions are bad and businesses looking how to make themselves more resilient, stronger, more efficient and effective, the first thing that comes to their mind is how I can digitize, how I can make my business more effective operationally, how I can bring more smart into the business so that I can survive. And in that sense, everybody will start looking at how they can bring more solutions and technology. If the macro environment is very strong and good and positive, then people would think, what's the next thing for me? How do I go even further in driving my multi-cloud or hybrid IT strategies? How do I prepare myself for those tough times to come later? So in either way, we find a good opportunity to find our customer. And obviously you could see, even if you look at the last 15 years of Dicker Data's performance and growth, you could find we did exceptionally well in the best times and in the worst times, in unpredictable times. So last year was very heavy in terms of so many things happened at once. This year, going to go more in business as usual and taking advantage of all that hard work that we've done last year. That's how we position ourselves. Now, where is that growth is going to come from? I mean, I've mentioned New Zealand many times already. I think David mentioned it and Mary mentioned it. New Zealand is a big opportunity for us. Over $600 million business, very strong market share. We still have some really good opportunities to bring more new vendors on board. But obviously, this it's not a secret. The obvious opportunity for us is to get and to bring our net profit margins in line with an Australian business. That, to me, is the biggest opportunity this business has right now from 2023. Second biggest opportunity is obviously our DAS business. We're thinking of doubling our business this year. It's this business, we've put so much hard work, all the branches refurbished, businesses is coming in, new vendors is being established. We've had the gap in New Zealand with DAS. Now we have made a small acquisition of CSP business, Connected Security Products business, that's going to give us the footprint of fantastic customer base and product sets in New Zealand, which result also in some upside in Australia. So we're lining that business really, really nicely to take opportunity of that as well. So DAS business, both New Zealand and Australia, is a great opportunity. And why we're highlighting it as an opportunity, I just want you to remember, DAS business operates and at least the double margins that IT business operates. In some instances, three times. So for us, if we go from a $75 million business to a $150 million business, and then a year after into $250 million business, at margins of 20% plus, in some instances 25% plus, you can do the math. It's a very, very attractive and very good business for us to focus on. And so far, what I've seen in the last 6 months, it's just going from strength to strength. Another 2 points is the cybersecurity. I think I've mentioned to you before, I've been focusing on this area. I'm looking at our own business. Lots of things we did with our own business at Dicker Data last year is actually improving our cybersecurity internally, putting the double and triple multifaceted anticipation systems in place, increasing our security, dropping our vulnerability. We've been tested by some of the industry-leading security analysis internally as Dicker Data of how we position, and we position ourselves incredibly well against the threats and so forth. So it's something that all organizations, big or small, is going through right now. And that space is becoming very, very saturated with so many different players. So we as a distributor, we bring the best of abilities, best of the cybersecurity vendor portfolios, we pack them in the solutions, and we're making sure that our customers know about it. And the market convergence, of course, we believe in this. We're seeing it working. Look at the professional AV market. Look at the electrical market, operational technologies market. If you look at the top 10 customers who's buying those products now, it's all IT customers and IT integrators. Exactly the same thing is going to happen with the physical security and the DAS business. So again, a big, big opportunity for us to open up a brand new market, brand new segment. Like that DAS acquisition of Hills gave us 3,000 new partners. And interesting stats, in the last 6 months, over 600 of our traditional IT resellers were buying DAS products, buying products from the Hill distribution. So again, you could see how it's all playing out. All right, I think my section is done, and now I believe we are the question time.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press *2. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. The first question today comes from Bob Chen from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. Just a few questions for me. Firstly, just on working capital, obviously saw a bit of pressure on that over FY22. Can you talk a little bit about how you're thinking about this going forward? I mean, it looks like most of the cap raise has been reinvested now. Do you expect to see some of this unwinding this year?
Bob, go, Vlad.
Okay, I'll just quickly... I'll take my view, and then Mary, you can add as well. Bob, yeah, absolutely, 100%. And we're already starting to show a good signs of reduction. As soon as we will start to see and get confidence in ETAs and deliveries, it'll naturally going to come down. It's a very simple mathematical equation. Our vendors give us targets. They want us to hit those targets. We wanted to make sure that we don't miss an opportunity, but on the other hand, we wanted to make sure that we have the right inventory in stock. Our biggest challenge with hitting the targets and getting the right inventory was inability to do that last year. This is as simple as that. You need to buy $10 million in order to receive, you know, a couple of percent rebates. We have to buy $10 million. We cannot buy what we want to buy. We can only buy what vendors have available for us to buy. When you're in this environment, it's naturally when your warehouse builds up with stock that it's then getting you know, harder to sell. Now, we're moving more and more into environments where we can get anything we want. With PC vendors, it's done. So now we're going into the mode of how do we reduce those lines that we brought 6 months ago. That's why if you look at the aging inventory, it's also quite high. The great thing is all our vendors working with us, they're giving us money in order to liquidate it. We've just chosen not to go too aggressive because obviously we're trying to maximize our margins. So, but ultimately, it's the function of the business, how aggressive we want to go in liquidating and stuff. So to answer your question, the further we go through this year, the more confidence we're going to gain in supply and ETAs, the inventory level is going to come down, the cash will free up, and I do believe that starting so somewhere around July, August this year, we're going to go in more of a normalized business as usual environment. We're bringing our inventory down to the normal sort of a 4 to 5 weeks of inventory levels and so forth. Yeah.
And just in terms of the receivables piece, because we couldn't complete orders in their entirety, we also found the day sales outstanding increasing with customers taking a lot longer to pay, or where they couldn't complete their own orders, requesting extended terms. And the type of customers we onboarded with the Hills business, there was established practices of longer terms, and we're starting to bring some of those back as well. So I think from a receivables perspective, some of it is going to be slightly more days, and part of it was contributed by the fact that orders weren't completed in total and customers were holding off paying, which really pushed out those days and the increase in receivables investment.
Okay, great. And then just on the comments earlier around the quoting activity, so a 30% increase, can you just sort of clarify, is that sort of 30% increase on sort of normal levels that, or a more normalized level that you're expecting?
Yeah, 30% increase on normalized levels. So when I, it's actually 30% increase on 22 levels. So when I looked at about a week ago, I've done a comparison of open quotes that we've done January 2023 versus January 2022. It's about 30% increase in quoting open quotes right now.
Okay, great. And like, how should we think about how that sort of flows into sort of the revenue mix this year or the revenue build for this year?
Obviously, look, the top line have increased, right? I mean, we've grown at 25%. So you kind of expect the quoting activities increase as well. But this is more to demonstrate that, you know, a lot of people find this market tough and a lot of people find it very challenging. And how is it going to affect us as an organization? So when I look at those metrics as a open quoting activities, it just gives me the good sense. And then I go and slice it further and segment it further as well through software, hardware, different areas, cybersecurity, Microsoft. And I could clearly see where there is an activity is happening. What's the market do? You know, what is driving that demand and increase in quoting activities? And to me, right now, as we speak, I don't see any signs of reduced reduced quoting activities and a normal demand into the business. Obviously, gives me a good confidence level going into 2023.
Okay, great. And then just the final one on DAS. You sort of given some color on the gross margin expectation, but just on the PBT margin for that business, like how does that compare to your core business?
Exactly the same. It's the double. Gross profit margins, and we would eventually expect a double NPBT. Again, NPBT may take a little bit longer because there was a lot of investments done, and it's still very heavily operated business. But we are rationalizing a lot of things. We're finding the way to operationally find a lot of efficiencies in our internal freight, external freight, servicing the partners. So yeah, I think it'll definitely drive a larger NPBT compared to the normalized IT business.
Great, thanks guys.
Thank you. The next question comes from Chris Gawler from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hey, David, Mary and Vlad, can you hear me okay?
Yes,
yep.
Chris, yep.
Awesome. I just want to ask firstly, just on early payment discounts. I mean, you made a comment that you sort of missed out on some of that in 2022. I mean, how much are you sort of missing out on at the moment versus typically due to working capital? And do you mind just outlining the financial impact of that?
So, yes, for sure. There's a couple of vendors where the settlement discounts can be quite lucrative. And it's in the vicinity of a couple of million dollars that we missed out in FY22. The opportunity is predominantly with HP and LG, and we have to make like strategic decisions around utilising that capital, which we're in previous years we have fully utilised. Settling HP on effectively COD for a settlement discount that's around 1.5%. So we do take advantage. We did take advantage of it during FY22 at various points. It's just not to the full potential that we could have.
And so do you expect this year as working capital unwinds that you'll be able to take full advantage of that again?
That's the plan, yes.
Yep, okay. And then maybe just on the gross margin dynamic, I mean, conscious there's quite a few like competing factors at the moment. You know, you've got mix between software and hardware. You know, within hardware you've got, you know, obviously DAS growing and different factors as well with PCs, maybe a bit softer. Do you mind just sort of giving us your thoughts on where you see gross margins heading into 23, maybe versus 22?
I think we've always been guiding the market on our gross margins at about 9%, and I think we've delivered that on our guidance because that's kind of within our control. We know how to control it. We could either go a little bit more aggressive on top line and probably get lower our gross margins. Well, actually, talking about the higher inventory, we probably could have gone in a little bit more aggressive mode and liquidating some inventory, but then it would be to the expense of the gross margin, you know, a gross profit margin percentage, which we've chosen not to because we knew that our vendors, the thing is, we know that our vendors are supporting us, and we know that the money is coming. It's maybe not coming as fast as we want it to come, but it is coming. So that's why we kind of balanced that approach last year. We're probably going to go in a little bit more aggressive sort of inventory reduction strategies this year and still maintaining our 9% gross margin. So the guidance has continued to be the same. We're probably looking at 9% this year.
Yeah, perfect. So maybe just another one on margins. I mean, obviously heading down the P&L, you're impacted by some inflation pressures, you know, freight and wages and things like that. I mean, how are they tracking year to date versus last year? Could that sort of start to become a tailwind through 23 to PBT margin?
Oh, well, we would start to start seeing some leverage from the cost base. You could also remember in FY22, we were carrying duplicate costs as well. We were running four different locations in New Zealand in terms of warehouse and office. That got consolidated about September, sort of the later part of the year. Similarly with the DAS business, it was more around sort of consolidating and setting our footprint and mark within that business, and we did spend some time investing in new branches, but we've closed the large warehouse that was adding a significant cost to impacting that business profit margins. And then overall from our underlying business, our core business, there was a lot of work done towards the late part of 22 around overall cost structure. So I would expect to get some leverage from that cost base in FY23, taking into account all those different elements.
Great. And just last one for me, just a comment that you made around how, you know, you're expecting enterprise and government, some of these bigger projects to drive demand in 23, while maybe SMB is a bit softer. I mean, Are you able to give us any sense for anything that you're doing differently this year to capitalise on that versus previous years?
This is actually more a function of the market. we've seen a good, strong performance from the mid-market and SMB last year. I think, obviously, the whole economic environment and so forth, while it brings a lot of opportunities, it may also mean that some of the very, very small businesses which we do, which we support and service a lot, they may go into a little bit more and more into must buy rather than want to buy or wish to buy. So we do feel it could potentially, by the way, I don't see that impact right now. I just wanted to make it very clear, but logically speaking, it will come. On the other hand, what I do see right now is increased quoting activities for the larger, bigger enterprise type of projects. And again, this is something that I have forecasted for this year because I know that government will step in and support a lot of large enterprise customers like Qantas, for example. Qantas couldn't really do much in the last couple of years. Qantas is now actively doing a lot of data center refreshment things and stuff. Telstra is coming back. And a few other things, and a few other larger enterprise customers that we have is showing a good, strong degree of activities. So I think we will start seeing some of those. I mean, enterprise projects is normally as a longer sales cycle opportunities, but we will definitely start seeing some dropping by mid and end of this year.
Perfect. Thanks, guys. That's all from me.
Thank you. The next question comes from Ed Woodgate from CCZ. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, guys. Thanks for taking my question. Or guys and Mary, I should say. Just trying to get like some extra colour on the gross profit margin guidance. So you did 9.4% in the second half, so I've backed out your GP margins correctly. Is there any reason that you wouldn't maintain these into the full year? So just thinking that fourth quarter is a bit stronger from retail perspective, are you just being conservative or might you have to discount some stock to move it?
I think, Ed, it's all about the balance, which I think we've been talking about around balancing revenue growth with margin. And ultimately, we look to deliver around that 9%. And selling through some of the inventory that we've built up is going to impact that.
Yeah, so Mary answered perfectly. I just wanted to add a little bit more color to this. So Ed, the way we look at it is very simple. Does business growing and doubling this business is going to have a very favorable effect on this 9.4%, right? Improving New Zealand business, driving more commercial and corporate business versus the fulfillment retail business is going to improve and have a very favorable impact on this 9.4%. However, getting our working capital quicker into the way that we can reinvest it, liquidating some stock a little bit quicker, getting that help from vendors and adding a little bit from ourselves just to speed it up a little bit quicker will probably have a negative impact. So balancing those three and making sure that we're achieving the objectives and goals for the organization would be the trick, especially in the next two quarters. I think from Q3 and Q4, it will be a lot more stable condition. Our working capital will be in line where we need it to be. Hopefully, the New Zealand business will start performing at the higher, at already, you know, like a business as usual margins. And then we're probably just going to see where there'll be an opportunity to uplift it. But at this stage, we're still very much focusing on getting that balance around 9%.
Okay. I mean, 9% is still a great gross profit margins. So sort of make sure I understand correctly, would it be fair to say that maybe you'd have slightly weaker gross profit margins in the first half and better in the second half? Is that the right way to think about it?
It's hard to say, yes, but probably yes. Second half probably going to be higher, yeah, and the first half is probably going to be slightly lower. But we'll see. We'll try to balance it nicely throughout the year.
Okay. And then just on the 30% increase in quoting activity, sorry to focus on that. I know you've talked about it a lot already, but it's just very positive. Just trying to get a sense of how much that translates to sales growth. Is that, so you might have touched on this already, bad line here for me, but can you give some color about your win rates and how they vary year to year, or is it possible that customers are sourcing more quotes from various distributors to manage inflation, or is there any other factors there that we should think about?
Sure. So I've looked at our win rates, and our win rate has remained constant. So you're absolutely right. Your question is, has a full merit. I mean, are we quoting more, but we're winning less? No. We're quoting more, we're winning the same. So it's the rate of between 15 to 16%. That's what normal conversion rate is. We're not dropping it. It's just a number of activities. But look, don't forget, our business have grown, right? So we are not $2.5 billion business anymore. We're $3.1 billion business. We're going to continue to grow this year. So it's obviously, it's a natural to expect from more vendors, more partners, bigger quoting activity. What I'm trying to demonstrate here that at the moment business does not see any slowdown in activities. In fact, we're incredibly optimistic. My team is very optimistic. So that's to that point.
Okay, that makes sense. And then just on your covenants, I mean, doesn't seem like you're in any danger of hitting them, but just so that we know and we understand, can you just provide some color around what they, or remind us what they are exactly?
That's correct. It's being predominantly a receivables facility that's funding working capital. It's really just an EBITDA to debt covenant and a debt service cover ratio, and both are well within the range.
Are you able to tell us what the number is, like the actual, the lock-up or the...
Well, there's two different facilities, so I'd prefer not to.
Okay, all right. And then just one more for me. So very pleasing, strong networking servers and storage growth in the second half. Is that, just trying to get a sense of like how to think about this, given you're probably supported by the backlog being drawn down a bit, but that everything we're hearing is that that's a strong area of growth. Would you say that
absolutely.
Second half, that's the new normal?
You do remember Ed as well. I mean, I've called it up all along last year. I was saying that data center infrastructure, anything to do with complex solution selling, is going to dominate the market. It started well. I agree with you. I think a few, supply is getting better. We started to get a few things. We start shipping a lot of backlog. By the way, the backlog on data center infrastructure is still like under $300 million. So it's still very healthy. So that's going to continue to invoice and ship this year. But what's very pleasing to see, like you've said, and what you're hearing in the market, that area is actually a growth area. So increase in quoting activities and other stuff is actually coming a lot from this area. So we're very hopeful that those enterprise networking and data center infrastructure vendors, including software, I think is going to be our flagship growth product segment this year.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for taking the questions. And yeah, it's been a challenging environment, but it looks like you've done a good job despite it all. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you once again. To ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. The next question comes from Orion Nerozzi from Barrenjoey. Please go ahead.
Hi there, hope you're well. First one for me, please. Can you just give us an idea what your revenue split is between SMBs and enterprise and gov? Because the outlook commentary did suggest, I mean, the outlook for SMBs obviously softer, but the enterprise business stronger. So can you just talk to what the relative magnitude of revenue contribution is to your business, please?
It's remained about 25-75 throughout 2022. The truth is it's a bit unknown for 2023. I do believe it's probably going to go 30% enterprise and 70% mid-market SME. But obviously, given the growth areas and net new areas of opportunities and net new growth, I think you're probably going to rebalance it back into the 75-25, because a lot of new market where we're opening, it's actually more into the SMB area. Like, for example, I'll give you an example. So DAS business, predominantly most of the business is done in that mid-market and SMB. This is the 90% of the business. And that's going to, and we're expecting for that to grow. So it's not the market growth, but Dicker Data is going to take share and grow in this segment. So our internal books will probably remain about 25-75.
Perfect. And if I just look at your PBT margins in calendar 19, which is probably the best reference point because there's a lot of volatility during COVID, but you were tracking about 3.6%. This half, you did about 3.4%. How do we think about, given all the comments you made around duplicated costs and gross margins remaining flat around that 9% mark, how do we think about PBT margins into calendar 23 and 24, like sustainable levels for your business?
Well, it's a very simple answer. Back in 18 and 19, we didn't have a $600 million New Zealand business, which at this stage is driving our NPBT down. If you look at Australia, we actually delivered 4% NPBT last year. So we just need to continue to drive better outcomes and on NPBT outcomes in New Zealand, and that's going to give us a really confident and good platform to continue retain that sort of somewhere between 3.5% and 4% we're very comfortable with, given that we find that improvement in New Zealand.
Okay, and how much of the New Zealand margin drag is New Zealand being underlying weaker because of retail in terms of PBT margins? And from a group perspective, how much of it is like duplicated costs? I mean, your costs stepped up quite significantly in the second half. Could you just quantify what the duplicated costs were in this half? And so that's the first part. And the second part, how much of it is New Zealand just being at a structurally lower margin because of retail, if that's the case?
Well, the retail business in New Zealand was somewhere circa 200 mil, and that operates on much lower margins somewhere in terms of BU profitability. What would you say, Vlad? It would be...
NPBT on that particular about is about 1%.
Yeah, about 1, I would say. And then in terms of costs, it was particularly around warehouse duplication. We had 4 properties, and in terms of quantum, it would be more so the first half though, because some of that was worked through into the second half. But then we had interest rate increases, and we had a facility that we put in place that to fund the working capital in New Zealand, which was driving the increase in overall costs, and that happened in June. And included in the New Zealand number is also, which isn't available for the whole of the previous year, only a proportion, is amortisation of intangibles as well, somewhere around that 2 million mark.
So if I look at just cash costs in own business, because interest costs we're aware of, D&A we're aware of, but your cash costs in own business was about $85 million in this half, second half 22. is that the new cost base, or would that cost, that $85 million, step down into the first half of 23 and second half of 23? Because it sounds like there's costs in this half in that $85 million.
Are you talking about New Zealand or just...
No, just the group.
Just the group. Perspective. Yeah.
Yeah, it was $85 million for this half and $154 million for the full year, cash cost of own business, so excluding
yes.
depreciation and interest. Does that $85 million for the second half step down? And by what magnitude? That's sort of basically what I'm trying to get at, is what the cost impost was in this half that won't repeat next year.
It's a hard one to sort of gauge specifically, because the biggest increase was around headcount and delivery on metrics within separate business units, and therefore performance-based payments being relative to those outcomes. So it's a difficult one to say, Ari, without having further dissecting it.
Okay. And so last one, just trying the debt profile. Like, is it fair to assume net debt improved slightly in first half calendar 23 and then second half 23 it improves materially, or will it remain elevated at these levels for this next 6 months, and then as these backlogs and supply chain issues fully gets resolved, it'll step down materially then? How do we think about cash conversion, please?
I think in terms of debt, the working capital is still going to be funded via debt. So whilst we step down working capital on sort of the existing volume, we are going to look at growing the business. So there is a reinvestment element as well. So in terms of total debt, I would say it would remain around the same.
Okay, so net debt, so debt minus cash for 2023 shouldn't really fall that much. It's just your existing business working capital will improve. So basically net debt...
And then reinvest, yeah.
Yeah, around $270 million will continue into calendar 23, basically, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay, and has anything in your payables, in your receivables and inventory days structurally changed versus pre-COVID? So if you're...
So not so much. Inventory is running higher, but that has got to do with type of inventory we're holding and the supply chain unpredictability, which some of that's going to get addressed. In terms of the receivables, part of the increase is possibly structural around the type of customers, the retailers who tend to pay a little bit longer days, and the security integrators who had existing legacy terms that were longer. But the element of our receivables book that had extended terms due to incomplete orders or not being able to fulfil complete orders and therefore extending payment terms, we're expecting that to come back, and we should see an improvement in that in the debtor days.
Okay, but not improvement in net debt. Like, that'll be pretty, yeah.
Well, then we're going to, I mean, we're looking at growing top line again further investing in other lines of inventory. So in terms of quantum of dollars, there's still going to be a requirement to reinvest in these new business segments.
Great. Really appreciate it, guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Gabriel Correa, private investor. Please go ahead.
Just continuing on the theme of receivables, the trend actually goes back closer to 2016-2017, where receivables are increasing at an increasing rate relative to revenue. So I was just wondering about the competitive position and the incentives you're offering to your customers, and yeah, the payment terms that are present there. Thank you.
Actually, Gabriel, that's a very valid point, because it's also in that environment where our competitors are offering extended terms, and part of that in terms of that structural piece is that to remain competitive in the market, the offer of terms outside of standard terms. So our standard terms are 30 days, end of month predominantly, but we've had some key sort of new partner acquisitions where terms are operating between 45 and 60 days. Now, often they're matched with support from the vendors in terms of extended terms, whether it was a result of supply chain disruption or whether it was very deal-based, and some of that's been supported with the vendors providing that. So we just have to assess where the market's at as well. So that's a factor that plays into sort of where we ultimately land on receivable days.
Okay, and so just to clarify, are the terms part and parcel of the core business, or are they increasing as you've done acquisitions, and those are the terms, the structural terms of the various businesses you're morphing into?
So those businesses that we've acquired had customer bases with terms that were higher than where we would have traditionally as an IT business operated at. Some of those we're having active conversations with customers on bringing some of those back. But then the competitive environment sometimes dictates what that might look like. And there'll be an element of that this year in terms of winning new business might require a supportive terms that go outside of our normal terms.
Okay, thank you for answering my questions.
Thank you. The next question is a follow-up from Orion Nerozzi from Barrenjoey. Please go ahead.
Sorry, guys, for asking the question. Just very quickly, to what extent, if any, did gross margins benefit from FX fluctuations? So obviously you hold inventory at cost, but if there's an Aussie dollar that's falling relative to the US, there's price increases that go through. Like in the second half, to what extent did that benefit the margin, please?
So Ari, it would have fed into the margin, but if in terms of other income, that represents FX revaluations, realised and unrealised, and the reduction in other income is a function of that mark-to-market, where because of these extended ETA dates and the general hedging policy, we had open POs from prior periods for some US vendors reflected at higher rates. So when those goods came in, were booked in at a more favourable cost. But the offset to that is the FX other income piece, and you can see in the other income line that's come off significantly.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. At this time, we're showing no further questions. I'll hand the conference back to Vlad for any closing remarks.
Okay, well, just quickly summarise 2022 as a very operationally heavy year, lots of unpredictability in the markets. I feel that our agility and our flexibility and our strong organizational culture have made us to deal with the best possible ways we could. I think it was a lot on. It was very, very busy. I think the stress levels were within organizations were very hard, and I'm so proud of organization to actually handle it and show it once again a great resilience. We've put ourselves, we've done so much hard yard and hard work, especially on operation, like, you know, in consolidating our New Zealand business, bringing DAS business, getting great platforms internally. We also went out into the market last year as well. We did our big TechX roadshow, which is a flagship of the industry show. Over 3,000 people attended. It's just been a lot on. So I think we're all looking forward for 2023 for what I call as business as usual year. Just get down to basics, get down to right metrics. Once again, it's $3.1 billion moving into a more growth. So the opportunity in front of us is exceptional. I think it's probably one of the more, like in my memory, one of the most enthusiastic ways to look at it when I look at how much opportunities there is within the business. So that would be my closing remarks.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect your lines.